Okay, good. So Diane, if you you're sitting in a certain order where you're at, so let's keep that order, which again I can't see, but maybe with you going first and then going clockwise or something like that, so that we have an order of sharing. Can we do that? Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. And then, so just to have an order because of sequence, then I will go first, and then Paul, if you go second, and Bertie go third, and then Diane, you go fourth, and then we'll just go around like that.
Okay.
Okay. So, number one, Intimidator uses anger to drive people away.
Intellectual takes knowledge for understanding.
Mm-hmm. And Bertie, you want to do the next one?
Hello.
Hi, Nancy.
Yes, hi.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi, Mike.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We're going to have a sequence here of how we're sharing. Do you have your topic with you?
No, I don't.
Okay. So are you close to a computer?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Then we're all looking at a topic right now, which you'll just listen to as we go around, but it's called Alcoholic Addict Roles, and we're just each one reading one of these like we would do if we were all together.
Oh, okay. Let me get on my computer.
So, Bertie, do you want to read the next one? Number three?
Blames negative events for addiction.
Thank you. And then, Diane, you want to do number four?
Yes. Number four, Blamer. Blames other people for addiction.
And then
number
whoever
five.
Next in sequence could go around. Yeah.
Number five, Patty. Playing dumb. I don't understand.
Number six, Avoider. Tries to keep a low profile.
Seven, Socialite. Keeps a high profile, but is superficial. Jeanette, AA expert, speaks in slogans but doesn't get personal.
Number nine, Bible expert, quotes scripture but doesn't get personal.
Okay, and I think it's up to me now. Number 10, con man, thinks he or she is fooling people.
I did.
Okay, so I'm not sure where I go now. I hope I didn't interrupt what you girls are all saying.
If you go to the PAL group website.
Okay.
And then go to the topics, the educational.
Is it just under PAL group?
PAL-group.org.
Okay.
And then go under the page that says educational topics.
Okay. .org, education.
It actually says
addiction support group.
Okay, let's see. It says PAL meeting lessons, it says.
PAL meeting. Okay, I'm not looking. I'm going to go to this one right here.
It's the page on your right. Just go down to PAL meeting lessons.
Okay. There it is.
And click on that.
Okay.
And then go to the next to the bottom one, which is alcoholic addict roles.
Oh, right here. Okay.
There you go.
Okay, great. Okay, here we are.
All right, so we're on the alcoholic addict roles first page.
Yep.
And then the second page is family roles. So we're doing alcoholic addict roles. And I think, did you, Paul, do number 11 there?
You want me to read number 11?
No, okay. we'll have Paul do this. So I'm just going to ask
Paul.
You
okay. Sorry.
To listen here. So, Paul, do you want to do 11?
Closed-minded. I know what I have to do.
There you go. And then Bertie? Mm-hmm.
Magic bullet.
Okay.
with magic bullets.
Magic.
You're cutting out a little bit, I think.
Hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Next, 13. Yeah, but. That's a good idea, but it won't work.
Number 14, deflector. Tries to focus attention away from self. Number 15, lip service. Agrees to follow through, but never does.
16, controller. Tries to control the course of their recovery. 17, rabble rouser. Stirs up conflict between people or groups.
Suspicious. I'm sorry, number 18, suspicious. What will you do with this information?
Thank you. So those are some of the most common predictable roles that we will see our loved one in when they're in their addiction and having those problems. Can you guys relate to some of these?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So what we want to do is notice that those roles are normal, they're predictable, and they all have the same thing in common. They're designed so that the person can continue to use.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just noticing that. Now, what we want them to do is get into recovery, and then if we see the bottom of this page, it says the recovering person, circle the new roles you'll pick. So we want them to take a new role. And Nancy, would you read the A?
A is disciple, apprentice, discerning follower, and willing student.
Thank you. Those are the roles that are offered in recovery. Can you see a commonality in those four?
Yes.
So if you think of your loved one, were they ever in one of those roles? Were they ever in that role where they were willing to be humble and learn and follow what was being taught and be the student instead of trying to be the teacher and being the disciple instead of the leader? Has anyone seen your son or daughter actually be in that role for real?
No.
Okay. So it really is, it's a major shift, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because when you're in that role, you're not in control.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So that's what we would like to see, and we may not be able to see it when we would like, but hopefully the time will come when we do see that. But let's say that they do pick that role. Let's go to B, and I'm just going to pick some people. Rhonda, will you read B?
Who will you pick to lead and guide you? Note, it should not be a family member.
Okay. Read that note again.
It should not be a family member.
There you go. So do you see the challenge we have there?
Yes, because we've all tried to get a family member to do it.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
But let's do some brainstorming here while we're looking at this. Suppose it's not a family member, then what are some options and choices that your son or daughter would have if they were willing to learn, willing to be in recovery? Who could they pick to lead and guide you?
A counselor?
Yep, there's one choice, counselor. Thank you. What's another choice?
Sponsor,
absolutely. What's the third choice?
God.
Yep, God's always going to be working through other people. So, yes, God's going to always be there. So we're going to assume that. And quite often, sometimes I'll hear a person say, Mike, I don't need a sponsor or a counselor. I've got God.
Yeah.
And I'll go, well, are you hearing his voice clearly?
Yeah.
So that's a challenge that we have is, sometimes they'll want that. So we do want them to have God, but God works through other people to help other people, and so it's a red flag if that's all they have. So we've got sponsor, we've got counselor. What's the third choice?
Another.
Yes, another person in the it's what we call the brotherhood and sisterhood of recovery. Other people, peers, that they can relate to who maybe been down the road further than they are, that they may listen to. They're not listening to us.
Mm-hmm.
but they may listen. So a peer, right? We could put that word there. Another recovering person who's in the, you know, in their support group. And then the fourth one might be a minister.
Mm-hmm.
So they do have people, and one of the suggestions I have for people is, ideally, it will be gender specific. So the men will pick a male counselor, a male sponsor, a male minister, a male friend to help guide them, and the women will pick females. And the reason for that is we speak a different language. Males and females speak different languages.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, so let's say that your son or daughter has adopted the role. We're seeing them in the role where they are listening. They are willing to listen and to make some changes. And they did pick a sponsor or a counselor or a friend in recovery or a minister or more than one of those. Look at C. So I'm just going to jump around here. Diane, will you read C?
What new behaviors, actions, will people notice you're doing in your new role?
Keep. Thank you. What we're talking about was what you, the client, you, the recovering person. So what will we see them? What are some of the new behaviors and actions? Let's just brainstorm options and choices here. What are some new behaviors and actions we'll notice when they are actually doing the work and doing the actions in their new role?
Socialize,
okay. And you mean, so not isolate so much, you mean?
Right.
Okay, so we could put that down. Thank you. What's another thing we might see them doing?
Going to their 12-step meetings.
Yep, going to meetings. Yep. What's another thing?
Asking for advice.
Asking for help. Yep. What's another one?
Not going out to places where people drink or do what they do.
Exactly. Maintaining their sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
What's another thing we want to see them do, hopefully?
The church.
Maybe, yeah, hopefully they'll go to church. Some of them are angry at God at this point, and we understand that, and God's got great big shoulders. So we don't force, you know, this is the general suggestion, we don't force religion on them. But I think in their own time, they will get that, and they will go. And some of them do want it right away, but there's some who are just turned off. And I like the saying that there comes a time when a man has the courage to explore his own spirituality. You know, and that time will come, and you know how sensitive they are to being pushed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we want to. It's not helpful if we over push them, but that is something we sure hope that they'll be doing there. What's another one?
Not being so vague in your conversations with them.
Letting you know some of the details of their life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That by being vague, they are, by controlling the information, that's how they're controlling the situation.
Oh, yeah.
So,
this may seem trivial, but eat.
yep. So what's another one?
It's not, the conversation is an I.
So they'll be more interested in other people and less, we could say they'd be less self-centered.
A good one.
Yep. Can you guys see that there's a lot here?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Let's keep going. Some other ones that are very key.
Actually, have something to talk about and share with people, because now they're just...
You died out of me. Say that again.
I said they'll just have better topics to be able to share and talk with you.
Yes, but keep this in mind. Let's go back to B. You see what? So this becomes an area where it takes a little while to learn this. You know, it's not that you're not talking to them anymore at all, or they're not talking to you at all. It's not that you're not interested in what they're doing, but it is a whole nother way of communicating to an adult than it is to communicate to a child. So it just takes time. I mean, they will always be your child, but being an adult child, we will communicate to them differently, completely differently, than if they were a child. And the reason for that is if we don't, they will manipulate the situation. And they will feel that you don't believe in them, that they can be an adult and can be successful. So there's a lot of problems that occur when we treat them and talk to them like they're a child, when they are in fact an adult child. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have the meetings and the topics, because it takes time to learn that. We don't expect that to be learned right away. So it's suggested that you have the conversation with your son or daughter when they're in recovery, and you say, what's your comfort level when we talk about your recovery? Should I ask you, have you been to meetings? Should I ask you, do you have a sponsor? Should I ask you what you're learning? You tell me what your comfort level is, because I don't want to be on your back and be what they call a helicopter mom.
Oh,
yeah.
Hover.
And so, and we're going to get to this to the other side, the our roles. So what new behaviors or actions will people notice that they're doing in their new role? Getting a sponsor. Working the steps. Getting rid of, no, that's not the right word, ending unhealthy friendships.
Okay.
Taking responsibility for their actions.
Mm-hmm.
Making better decisions. Learning to have more control of their anger instead of it being out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Being willing to be patient at times. Do you see, guys, that this is a lot?
Yeah, I do.
It's almost like for them to learn the skills they need to have a clean and sober life, it's almost as if they took 2 years of a full load at a community college. Can you see how intensive that is?
Yeah.
And how long that is? And why they get discouraged? And why they could run from it? It's too big of a challenge. It's too much. They're not running from a 30-day treatment. On the way, they are running from a 30-day treatment. But they're running from something bigger than that, changing their whole life. Now, knowing this, I'm going to take a poll here from you guys. Does it make you more discouraged or less discouraged to know this?
Oh, less discouraged. More.
Some people would be more, and that's normal. So it's not bad for you to be more discouraged, because it's almost like you're finding out that it's a longer road than you thought it was going to be, or a harder road than you thought it was going to be. But I think that's what we're learning. If we can accept that in most cases it's longer and harder than we would hoped, if we can accept that, then it's not as big an issue. If you can accept it's 8 years of college to become a doctor, instead of thinking I can do it in three,
mm-hmm.
it's more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So some people will be able to, I said 2 years, some people will be able to do it in 1 year. So to be more accurate, 1 to 2 years. But it's safer to think in terms of two, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
So we're not being negative here. We're being realistic.
Mm-hmm.
They have so much to learn, and it isn't just getting rid of drugs and alcohol, then I'll be fine. If they're addicts. Sometimes we're not sure. Okay, now let's just do a couple of examples here. Just one or two people, one at a time. What's coming to your mind from this side? Because we're going to go to the other side in a minute. What's coming to your mind as we looked at this topic and discussed it? What's coming to your mind? Someone give me, just off the top of your head, off the top of your mind, what's coming to mind as we look at this?
One day at a time.
We're going to have ups and downs.
We're going to have ups and downs one day at a time. Absolutely. So there's another analogy that I use, and that is the problems you're trying to deal with your sons or daughters, the problems you're trying to deal with, at times, don't they seem like calculus problems? They're so complicated.
Yes.
So keep in mind, if you took a calculus class, you would understand how to solve calculus problems. Does that make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But here's the problem. In order to take calculus, you have to first take trigonometry. And in order to take trigonometry, you have to first take and complete a class in geometry. And in order to take geometry, you have to take algebra. So let's say that you are in the process of taking algebra. It's going to take some time for you to get to the point of taking the calculus classes. So in other words, the concept of incremental learning through time fits for you as well. Now, it's not as intensive, so you don't have to have a full load for a year. That's way intensive. But if you will continue to read books, go to counseling occasionally for yourself, go to meetings, within 6 months to a year, this is the promise of the program, you will get to the point, because of your education, you will either know what to do, no matter what they do, or you'll know where to get the answer. Would that be nice to be at that point?
Yes.
So this is what I'm finding from people who are willing to take that time and put in that effort, that you can get to that point. So that's why we have a meeting. Otherwise, we just have a seminar.
Right.
And I used to do this in seminar format at treatment centers, and people would say, and sometimes it was a half-a-day seminar, sometimes it was a three-day seminar, and people would say, Mike, I've learned so much. This is so helpful. But you know what? They weren't able to put it into practice. It was too much. They got a glimpse at solving calculus problems without learning calculus. So that's when the idea came, somewhere around 2004, 2003, somewhere in that time. The idea came, we need a group. We need repetition and reinforcement, and we need support and encouragement. This can be learned, but it's going to take a little bit of time. Not a lot of time, a little bit of a time. So, someone else, what's come to your mind as we look at that side?
Well, what comes to my mind, this is Patty, is it took them a while to get this way, so it's going to take a while to get out of being this way. You know?
Absolutely. And if we look at parents, you guys have been the way you are all along because there's nothing wrong with the way you are. So there's no reason for you to change. And yet, if you can learn a few things to make some changes, so in essence, there's nothing really wrong with what you're doing when it comes to raising a child. The problem is when you start to raise an adult child who still is a child inside, but in all reality, they're an adult child. You see the confusion there.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes us to the other side of the page two, family roles. So, if anyone have any comments on the other side before we switch to family roles?
I would just say that it makes me think about how much patience that it's going to take for us to.
There you go.
Yeah.
Absolutely, patience is a strength. When we were farming communities, we knew that. We put it into practice. We lived it. We gradually lost it over the last 60 years, unfortunately, and so we lost a strength, and we don't even know it's a strength as a society. Everything's about speed, fast, get it done, time is money. So therefore, patience is weakness and slow and costing money. You see the problem there?
Yeah.
It's a universal problem with our whole culture. So in some ways, we have to look at our culture in order to understand this mystery and learn about calculus. So yes, patience is very important. Let's look at family roles. Instructions, family roles, when it comes to how you've tried to help your loved one. Circle all the roles you recognize in yourself. So I'm going to go first. Codependent has a strong need to take care of and please the client and everyone else. Paul, you want to do number two?
All right.
For some reason, Paul, you and Bertie are cutting out. We'll hear some of the words, but not all of them.
Okay, let me do it again. Mabler has a strong need to take care of and please the client.
Great, thank you. Bertie, you want to do number three?
Number three is rescuer. Inadvertently keeps the client in a dependent position.
Thank you. And then
four,
Diane, you want to do the next?
Plays the part of policeman for the client.
Number five,
ignorer, gives up because nothing works.
Whoever that is, if you can sit closer to the machine, that would be helpful.
Help the client change by controlling all their decisions.
Okay.
A jailer tries to help the client change by keeping them safe at home.
Number 9, lecturer tries to use lecturing, criticizing, or advice to get the client to change.
Thank you. Can anyone relate to any of these?
Yes.
Okay, now, just to, so we can sort of lower this guilt level here a little bit, where it says family roles at the top, write these words underneath that. Normal for raising a child. You see how important it is for you to know this?
Mm-hmm.
Because these do work on a child, because you are there, you are responsible for them. They are not responsible for themselves. This is your obligation to be these things towards them. The only thing you're guilty of is growing up in a culture that pretends it has a rite of passage when it has none. You see the problem there?
Yeah.
The only thing you guys are guilty of is you are raising your adult child as if they were still a child. And without a rite of passage, how could you be interrupted and know to change? You see the problem? The rite of passage is for the parents to let go and form a whole new relationship. I mean, didn't you have a new relationship with your parents at a certain point?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly, but it happened through experience. Because we don't really have a structured rite of passage. Now, things were easier 60 years ago because we do have an informal rite of passage, meaning the whole village had permission, opportunity, and time to help impart an adult coping skill to a child. But it was through experience. It was not some structured way where we knew it happened. So a neighbor could teach your son something, and he didn't even know he taught it, and your son didn't even know he learned it. That's how we learned ours.
Mm-hmm.
But we thought our kids would learn the same way. But these are different times. The village does no longer have time, permission, or opportunity. These are different times. So there's really nobody to blame except President Obama. I blame whoever the president is because this is a whole culture-wide problem to realize that we've gradually lost our informal rite of passage is a mere shadow of its former self. And we have lost something that we couldn't see and didn't even know we lost it. And so we just sort of assume that at 18, you've got adult coping skills, you know, because we did. We got them, but we may have got them at 18, 19, 20, somewhere in there. But we got them, but these were different times. Majority of kids today are not getting them, and it's not your fault, and it's not their fault, and it's not your parents' fault or your grandparents' fault. It's a cultural fault. So this addiction and this recovery from the addiction, the recovery teaches them the adult coping skills that they will not learn from you. That's the value of the addiction and the recovery from it. It has a positive. Where else are they going to learn these adult coping skills? Where else are they going to learn patience and honesty and taking responsibility and making good decisions? I'll tell you where: jails, prisons, streets, gangs, and treatment centers. So the village today is still helping the kid learn these things, but it's a different part of the village. This is a bitter pill to see and to hear. But it's helpful because now we can realize two things. Number one, they need to learn these life skills. And number two, we can't teach them. See how important it is to know that?
Yeah.
And number three, recovery will teach them once they submit to it. So let's look at the new roles. Now, underneath that box it says, or that title it says, new roles, circle the ones you pick, write parenting an adult child. So, Jeanette, will you read A?
A, partner, encourager, listener, boundary setter, positive communicator, cheerleader.
Thank you. Those are the new roles that are, those are some examples of new roles as parents that you can pick to replace the old roles above. What's the thing in common with all the old roles above? They're different, but there's something in common. What's in common with all of them?
They keep the child dependent on the parent?
Absolutely. They accidentally keep the cycle of them not growing up continuing. That's not your intention. That's an unintended consequence. That's why they want to live at home. That's, they want you to do these things. That's why they want you to tell them what to do at times, you know, when they're playing that game. Tell me what to do so I have no ownership in it. They want you to push them and lecture to them and try and control them so that they can rebel. You guys ever see that game that they play with you?
Oh, yeah.
That's what the book Smoke and Mirrors helps you see. So the bottom line with those top ones is they do not work on adults. But yet, if it's all you know to do, then you will do it because you've got to do something. So don't be too hard on yourself. The fact that you're still doing those is a sign you care and love them because you're doing what you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get so discouraged over time, and this is all has to do with history and time, that you can get to the point of doing ignorer. Anyone ever get there? That's out of desperation. That's out of like, hey, I'm either going to ignore or go nuts or go insane because nothing's working and I'm just hurting myself. Can some of you see that you could potentially get to that point? Now, the other thing is, I've had people tell me this, so don't take this in the wrong way. I've had moms and dads, because of the history and how long it's been and how discouraged they are, they may even have fantasies of their son or daughter passing away.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's normal because it's almost like as horrible as your life is and as hopeless as it seems, you might actually be better off going back to God. At least you'd be out of your misery and at least, you know, all the people that you've been hurting and continue to hurt would not be continued there. Anyway, there is a reason for that, and it's not a monster that you're a bad person. If that thought comes to mind, it's very normal. It's extremely normal, but you can see where we couldn't share that with another person. There's no way they'd understand that.
Mm-hmm.
So those top roles do not work, and they will drive you insane, which is not helping your child, and they will also make it harder for you to help your other family members who need you. So it's a big black hole that you just jump into. But they're habits, and they're not going to change overnight. So if you pick one of those bottom roles there, like partner or listener or encourager or boundary setter or positive communicator, notice that those are less. A cheerleader is not the same as a lecturer. A listener is not the same as a rescuer. It's doing less, isn't it? These new roles, you're doing less so that they do more. Well, Mike, what if they don't do more? Well, do you think you doing more makes them do more? It's a challenge for us. It's tough. What if they don't do more? Well, then consequences come along for them. So let's say that you picked one of those roles. Someone give me an example. Which one would you pick as far as at least to start with and build on?
Boundary setter.
Okay, so someone, who was that?
Rhonda
said boundary setter. Good. Let's use that as an example. Now let's go to B. Who will you pick to help it? You learn this. See, this new role, it's not going to just come automatically because I picked it. There's a lot of work for me to do to learn this new role. So who will you pick to learn, help you learn this new role? It's best to ask for input from several sources. So just like we brainstormed the other side, what are some options and choices of who you can go to help you learn the new role?
Your pastor.
See that pastor? Okay, what's another one?
Like a group or like a women's Bible study?
Yep, there's all kind of groups, Bible study, PAL group, Al-Anon, so groups, yep. What's another one?
A mentor.
A mentor, yep. And how about a counselor?
Mm-hmm.
Here in Phoenix, the moms that I see doing the best, and the dads, quite often, and I wouldn't say 100% of the time, but 90% of the time, they found a good counselor that they can relate to who knows about addiction and codependency, and that counselor is helping them make tough decisions on how to adjust the help that they're given to their loved one. See, this is a key word that we use, is precise help. It's never going to be no help. We're never going to suggest you never help them, of no help at all, but precise help. And as the new role, you will learn how to adjust the amount of help, because what's going to happen if you give them too much help? What's going to happen? Exactly. So it's not always easy for us to see where that is. So we're going to learn through time. And we can actually say, hey, I love you, and I will always help you. However, I'm learning how to adjust and fine-tune the help that I give you, because I don't want to help you in the short term, give you help in the short term that winds up hurting you in the long term. See, these are the kind of words that we can learn when we're talking to them. See how it's more adult to adult? And on the website, there are some tools on there. One of the pages is Nuggets and Gems, and it's got some suggested sentences, because we're learning a new way to communicate with them and talk to them and treat them like they're a man and a woman, not a little boy and a little girl, even though they're acting like a little boy or a little girl. You see how hard that is? So someone then read, and I'll pick somebody here. Bertie, will you read C?
In your new role, what new behaviors, actions will people notice you are doing when it comes relating to the client?
Thank you. So we've got a new role that we can kind of hang our hat on. Maybe we pick listener, maybe we pick boundary setter, cheerleader, whatever. And we're going to groups and maybe finding a mentor and a counselor. So we're actively learning and practicing to learn this new role. Now, what new behaviors will your son or daughter and other people notice when it comes to relating to your addicted loved one? What will people notice new actions you're taking with them? Let's just brainstorm in the group here. Someone give me an example.
Have more peace, inner peace.
You'll have more inner peace because you have less responsibility for something you can't be responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. What's another one? See, this is not easy, is it? One mom said, I was talking to my daughter, and she said, I've really learned to be more of a listener because I'm not lecturing or criticizing or giving advice anymore. And she said, my tongue is black and blue from biting it. So that might be something that people notice, is that you are talking less to them and listening more.
We should be doing more for ourselves.
There you go. I like that. If we're in a group. There you go. So in a group, I'm asking you guys to give some applause to whoever said that.
Yeah.
Yay.
There we go. We've got people now who are coming to the group and going, we're going on vacation. This is husband and wife together in the group. We're going on vacation next week. Boy, we give them two rounds of applause. Because that's what we call healthy selfishness.
Yeah.
You are taking care of yourself and doing things that you need to for your own inner peace. And I'll tell you, when you do these things, although it looks selfish to people who are ignorant about this, and that's 90% of the population,
it looks
ignorant to family members and other people who don't know. I'm telling you this, in my experience, it's helping your son or daughter more than anything you could give them. And I'll tell you the reason why. Because whether you like it or not, you're their role model. And they're looking at you and all your misery because you're so responsible for other people in their lives and responsible for them. And they see the pain you're in and how much you dedicated your life. And they say, and you want me to grow up and be like you? No way.
Mm-hmm.
See, what? At 18, that's what changes. You are no longer their life coach. You're fired by Obama. Well, fired by the United States government. You're fired, and you're now, you're still in their life, but now you are their role model. Well, you were always their role model, but now you're your role model only, and it's even more important in a way, because as they try to emulate you, and you are living a life that has a little more peace and happiness in it, then they think, well, maybe I can. Mom and Dad did. Maybe I can do this. And this is very subtle. You know, this is one of those hidden things that creates sons and daughters to have depression. It's not the whole thing, but it's a factor that we don't normally think of.
Mike, do they look at us as being a role model, even if they don't want us around or talk to us?
Absolutely. It's ingrained in them. Now, it's gender specific. So if you've got a son, Mom?
Yes, I do.
Okay, well, if that's the problem, well, his dad's a role model, and that's whether you like it or not, that's the challenge that we have. It's gender specific. Now, you can be a role model of hope for him that he can have a happy life someday, but the dad will be the role model of to be a man and be a happy man someday.
Well, his father's deceased.
Now, here's the problem. If the father's deceased or the father has his own problems or whatever, then he's going to find another man who will help him. And again, it's gender specific. It won't be a woman.
Okay.
Now, he may look to a woman for that because of the comfort of that. But all it's going to do is delay the process.
Okay.
And so it's very important to realize that if it's a gender difference, if it's a dad with a daughter or a mother with a son, you can be a role model of hope for them, but you cannot be the role model for who they're going to be when they grow up because of the gender.
Okay.
Right. Yep.
So, and see, a lot of times moms are trying extra hard to make up for the missing dad.
Yeah.
But it actually creates a secondary problem. So it's better off to not do that. Now, this is the kind of conversation you can actually have with your son. Is you can say, hey, this Yahoo in Arizona was saying this. Now, let me ask you about this. You can have, these are called adult conversations. You can say, hey, this is what this guy is telling us. Now, granted, when you can catch them when they're willing to have a conversation with you and they're clean and sober or at least able to talk to you. You know what I'm getting at? In other words, you have to pick your time here.
Yeah.
But when you have a serious conversation, you can say, hey, this is one of the things that we're learning at our groups, at the group we go to, that I go to, and it's saying, you know, that your dad is your role model, and I can't really be your role model, although I can help you, and sometimes I try to maybe overhelp you to make up for the fact that dad's not around. What do you think of that, son? See, now you're valuing his opinion.
Yeah.
Now you're valuing his opinion. So we can check out all the stuff that we share in how we did in the when Diane read the our guidelines. Everything's theory, and you can always check it out. You know, ask other people their opinions and ask and it's just not going to fit in every situation, and it's not gospel.
Okay.
But it gives you something to try.
Yeah.
And see if it can be proven for yourself. So these are some of the changes that you can see in yourself, but they will not come naturally. They are unnatural. They are, as one person put it, counterintuitive. They go against your intuition, because why? Your intuition is how to raise a child.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're not telling you to do anything different in how you raise your children who are difficult in our language, children, 17 or under. We're just suggesting that you learn this new set of skills, how to parent an adult child, and keep the set of skills you have for it. See how you're just adding, you're not getting rid of anything?
Yes.
And you still at times will rescue. They may need you at times to rescue them, and still you can be at a time ignore and times that you can punish them. It's just that you can't do it the same way as your only set of tools for raising them. It won't work. It'll backfire. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So now, any comments on this side of it?
Well, this is Rhonda, Patty's daughter-in-law.
Uh-huh.
And I dropped my husband off today at the Salvation Army.
Oh, okay.
Program.
Yay! Good for you.
So, I'm kind of scared to death for when he comes out and have to start, you know, trying to figure out all this stuff with him.
Well, here's the good news. You don't have to. He will have the Brotherhood of Recovery doing it all for him. You see how you accidentally slipped back?
The role model.
Did you see how you accidentally? Again, this is normal. This is natural. And we're not expecting to change. But what's going to happen is through time, you'll catch yourself and you'll just, wow, you should see outside my window right now. It just hailed. It almost looks like snow.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah, it's raining and hailing here in Phoenix, and it looks like snow out there, but it'll melt quickly.
Wow.
But anyway, do you see how this is working, Patty? That you can catch yourself. You can see, hey, here I was taking responsibility for his having to work a program. I am not responsible for him in his program. He's a man. By the way, Patty, when you think of your husband, what age do you see him in your mind?
Oh, you're Rhonda.
I'm
Rhonda.
Rhonda.
Yeah.
Here's mother.
Patty's the mom.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotcha. What age do you see him?
Me? I see him 16.
There you go. How old is he?
He'll be 40 in July.
Okay, change that picture. I didn't wake up till I was 36. Change that picture. It's still possible to wake up. But change the picture to be the truth. It'd be different if I was saying, hey, change this to some other fantasy. He's not 16. That's a fantasy.
Right.
The thing that works in recovery is the truth. The thing that works in life is the truth. The thing that works with God is the truth. And yet, it's not your fault that you see him at 16 because he acts that sometimes.
Yes.
But it's just a habit, and you can change that habit. And does it make sense that it'll be helpful to change the habit?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, because then, see, that was a 16-year-old picture why you said, oh, when he gets out, I have to help him with all. See, you see how that fit with a 16-year-old picture?
Yes, I do.
So our thoughts are powerful in our mind, and we can change those habits of thinking, and so that's something you can do. You can't change him, but you can change your mind and your pictures, and that the reason it's important is because that will be our reality by which we make our decisions. Diane, you worked on that a little bit, didn't you? Changing the mind picture.
Yes.
I mean, do you still see your son as a young child in your mind?
You know what? I was looking back at some of the other educational topics, you know, where it's preschool. You know,
uh-huh.
He's in high school right now.
I got you.
So it's getting better.
Uh-huh.
And the conversations we've had lately has been, and I really noticed with reading Smoke and Mirrors about the I. Now it's like, how are you, Mom? What's going on in your life?
Uh-huh.
You know, more adult questions.
Because he's in treatment.
No, he is graduated from rehab. He's living with a Christian family in New York.
Oh, that's right. That's right. But
right.
But treatment, he went through treatment, and now he's in recovery after treatment.
Absolutely, yes.
Uh-huh.
And I think, Mike, the big thing was, and I didn't tell everybody here, but I thought it was pretty cool. I was asking if he liked the family he was with. He said very much so. He'd really like to stay. And then this was kind of surprising. And then he goes, but his mansion where he was at has asked him to come back to be a mentor. And he said, but I would like to go back to his mansion because they've done so much for me.
Uh-huh.
Normally, it would have been more like, oh, I don't want to go back and all this, you know. But it was more of an adult talking.
He wants to give back.
Yes. Yes.
That's great. Yeah, that's really good. That's really good. So you are at the top of the roller coaster ride right now, aren't you?
Today.
Do you remember the saying that we talked about, MYE?
Yeah,
MYE.
MYE.
Mind your expectations.
No.
Because, you know, and we're not saying be negative, but we are saying that it's going to be helpful for you to be aware that when things are going well, sometimes in our mind it just sort of grows, and we get up sort of like the 20th floor of our hope building. And then if something happens, we fall 20 floors, and it hurts. And we're so, so disappointed. I can't believe how disappointed I am. Well, you're the one who took yourself up to the 20th floor. You got your expectations up.
That's right.
And we can do this unconsciously, not even realizing we're doing it. So we're just making people aware of that. So what you can do is you can get on the elevator and go down to the second floor. Go from the 20th floor down to the second floor. I'm still positive. See, it's not negative. You have to be in the basement to be negative. So you're on the second floor of hope for him. Now, if something happens, you only fall two floors, two stories. It doesn't hurt as much.
Hey, that's right.
So this is something we can do because, believe me, it helps them when we're not as discouraged over their stuff. They do sense our feelings, and they do feel bad. And when we feel too bad, they feel too bad, makes them want to use. You see how that goes?
Yeah.
So that's why it's important to get back to what we were saying before, taking care of myself. Self-care. That is so important, and we forget about it because we've been raised to take care of others. That's our culture. It's a society. And some of that is okay. Too much of anything is a problem. Okay, so Diane, this is a time where we can share personal things that's going on. So who else wants to, and you're doing great. So can we give Diane a hand for what she's doing?
Yay, Diane. Yay.
Yay, yay. All right, who else wants to share and tell us what's going on? And this is kind of like a check-in of this is what's happening.
Well, it's Nancy. Is it exciting? My son's Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned 27 on January 17th and decided that day he wasn't going to drink anymore, that he could quit drinking.
Uh-huh.
And he decided he had to grow up and be an adult, and he didn't want to go to a counselor. We talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was gone for a few days, and I got back yesterday, and I spent the afternoon with him today. And I asked him how he's been doing. I know you've been busy with your job. Have you had any alcohol? I'm just curious.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, actually, one night I did. I went out, and I wanted to see if I could handle having a drink without having a problem. And he said, I had two drinks, and then I stopped.
Uh-huh.
And so I just said, well, how do you feel about that? And he goes, well, I didn't really enjoy it when I was drinking it, and now I'm back to where I'm not drinking again.
Uh-huh.
And so then I didn't know what to say.
Well, let's back up a while here then. And Nancy, why are you even having these conversations with your son? Why is this even taking place? What's been the history? Is he living with you? Are you helping him financially?
He's been living with me since August. He's planning on moving out in the spring. He's moving into a house that's being renovated with two other friends.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't lived with me since he was 17, so
I got you.
It was just a short-term thing so we could save some money and then go get an apartment because he's been living with his girlfriend, and that ended.
I got you.
So he works. He has two jobs, and he's had a real problem with drinking, and he knows he has a problem. But even though I talked to him about, maybe if you go talk to somebody, a counselor, because he won't go to AA. He's done that before, and he doesn't like AA.
Well, this brings up a whole other issue, Nancy. He may not be an alcoholic.
Really?
Yes. Did you ever ask him? Do you consider yourself to be an alcoholic? What did he say?
Oh, he doesn't. He doesn't think that he is.
Okay, so here's what I'm saying. What does it say in the Bible about as a man thinketh in his heart? I'm not good at quoting the Bible. That's just one of the few things I know. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So in his mind, if he's not an alcoholic, then he's not an alcoholic. So if you try to help him as if he is one, you see the problem there?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's how we'll know whether he's an alcoholic or not. He'll be able to control his drinking. See, how many of you believe that the addiction is in the drug?
I do. Okay. No, it's in the person.
If the addiction is in the drug, then every person who drinks alcohol would be an alcoholic, wouldn't they?
Right.
So, again, there's a lot of misinformation about addiction out there. And here's the reality. The addiction is not in the drug. It's in the person. And then you say, well, Mike, what about a person getting addicted to heroin and then they go into tremendous pain when they stop using? That's not addiction. That's physical dependency. Those are two different things. Mm-hmm. And if you thought they were the same thing, then you would accidentally think you could create an addict. You can't create an addict any or alcoholic any more than you can create a diabetic. Mm-hmm. You can just reveal it. So what I'm saying, Nancy, is you're going to get along with him a lot better if you stop calling him an alcoholic or treating him like he's an alcoholic. Treat him like he is where he says he is, and then let him find out the truth. See where your patience comes in here?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that having been said, since he's living in your home, you can have a home house rule, no drinking. Anyone who lives in my house is not going to be drinking, period.
Mm-hmm.
That's different.
Yep.
That's a house rule. And then you can then go buy a breathalyzer. You can get them at drugstores, I think as cheap as $20 or $30. And then you breathalyze him. And then you have an agreement that if he does drink while he's there, that's relapsing, and he will leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll find out if he's an alcoholic, and he'll find. In other words, we can't just label a person alcoholic, and sometimes they mislabel themselves. It's tricky. We don't always know. But when a person says to me, Mike, I always ask them, do you consider yourself, see how respectful it is to do it that way? Do you consider yourself to be an alcoholic or an addict? If they say yes, I'll say, are you 100% sure? Give me a number. If they say 99% sure, that's not sure. So sometimes they mislabel themselves. I would rather have you say, I'm not sure. We can deal with that.
Yeah.
But if you say, there's some people saying, yes, I am an addict, when they don't 100% believe it. I want to know that. So if they say, I'm 100% sure, I'll go one more question deep here. Would you bet your children's life on it? Would you bet your family's life on it? Are you that certain? If they say no, then they're not certain. If they say yes, of course, I am that certain. Now I can call them an addict and alcoholic because they did. We don't get to call people and label people, but we do it all the time, don't we? Bobby's a smart kid. Unfortunately, Jamie's not so smart. You know, we grew up with it. Our whole culture does this. And when you try and label somebody, it's not your intention to do that. You're trying to help him.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to create resistance from him. And I think I just suggest people, if you say, has alcohol been a problem for you, what would he say?
He would say yes.
Okay. Then I would suggest stop using the word alcoholic, if you're using it, and use the word problems with alcohol. See how different that is?
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, I'm concerned about your problems with alcohol, Peter.
Right.
But I'm learning, or I've been told, that if you don't think you're an alcoholic, then you may just be a person who has abused alcohol and is not really addicted to it. Therefore, you're not an alcoholic. So instead of me thinking you're an alcoholic, I'll be not sure. Yeah, that's changing you?
Yeah, I'm just a little confused, like I'm not really sure like how to talk to him, because I know when he's been drinking, he can cry and talk to me.
But when he's drinking and crying and talking to you, he will not remember anything he's done. It will be a wasted. It'll be every second of it is wasted. Mm-hmm. Every second of it is wasted. You'd be far better off to just stay away from him when that goes on. Okay, but if he's still drinking at home, if he is not addicted to it, if he's just an abuser, he can cut down and quit. He can just quit. He can just quit cold turkey. So you could. So I would suggest you say, if you want to live in my house, it's going to be no drinking. See how different that is than you're an alcoholic. You need treatment. See how different that sounds? I'm not saying you're saying that.
Right.
But it's not going to be helpful to say that. So what you can say is, I've decided, if you're living in my house, I don't want you to drink. Will you be able to not drink? What would he say?
I'm not sure. I know in the past he's told me that he can control it.
All right.
And, that he can control.
All right, then if you can control it, you can control it down to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. I recommend, since he's had problems with alcohol, that, see, it's enabling of you to allow him to live in your house and to drink,
mm-hmm.
whether he's an alcoholic or not. Now, let's suppose what problems has he had with drinking before, Nancy?
Oh, he's had When he was like late teens, early 20s, he had several DUIs and went to prison for 6 months.
There you go. Okay, so now that still doesn't make him an alcoholic, but it does confirm he's got a problem with alcohol. So would you have, let me use this. This is something that other people have found helpful. When you're thinking about decisions with your son, think about a 55-year-old cousin from Chicago staying with you with the same first name. They're your third cousin. So you have a third cousin named Peter who's 55. He's had problems with alcohol in the past. You're going to let him live with you. Are you going to let him drink in your home?
No.
Okay. Then there's a good model that you can use with Peter. You see how that works, you guys?
Yes.
It's just a tool to help you in your decision-making process. Yes, I love this 55-year-old third cousin, but I have a different relationship with him. I'm not going to let him drink. Then why would I let my son drink? Yeah. Does that prove I love him more? Is that it? Why am I doing that? So I would have a conversation with him and say, look, I'm talking I'm getting educated about this thing, Peter. If you want to continue to live in the home, I want to make this rule of not drinking at all, zero drinking, period.
Okay.
Now, then you'll see how much he fights for it. But Mom, I can drink normally. Why are you doing this to me? Hey, you've had problems with drinking in the past. It would be unwise for me to allow you to drink while you're living here. Look at all the money, much more money you'll save too by not drinking. And if you can't not drink just for a period of time to save up money, what does that say about you, son?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, those are just thoughts and ideas, Nance.
Yeah. Okay, I appreciate that.
Yep.
This is Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi. First of all, my son finally got a part-time job. He's living at home.
Uh-huh.
And he's been working there for 2 weeks, only probably working mainly Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
And how old is he?
He is 24. He'll be 25 this year.
Okay.
And Sunday, he was at work for about an hour and a half. So he called us and we went and picked him up and he said that they had overscheduled. I don't know if he got fired or I didn't really ask. I just know that they were really busy on Sunday, but he was sent home.
Uh-huh.
Monday morning at 3:45, I got a call and it was Corey at Hendricks County Jail. He had been pulled over with a friend of his. They were going to see his girlfriend, and I don't know who the friend was. I don't even know if he was the one driving or anything about it, but they found out that Corey had a warrant out for his arrest. He had been going to court, and it kept getting delayed, and probably in August, he told me that he thought the court date was on Wednesday. I'm sorry, he thought it was a Thursday, but it was actually a Wednesday. And that he had talked to his lawyer and everything was cool. And, well, anyway, when he tried for a job at Kroger, on the paperwork it said a warrant out for his arrest. And I said, Corey, you need to do something about that. But apparently he did not because he's in jail. And I've tried to find out, you know, how long he's going to be there. No one can tell me that. But as far as I'm concerned, he can stay there for a long time.
Hey, let's give a hand.
Yay. That's so hard.
Oh. It's not easy to do that. But
it's
they need to experience the consequences. Yep. How else are they going to learn? Are they going to learn from your words?
Yep. You're right.
They need consequences. And it's interesting. They create the very consequences they need. So what's your question, Kelly? Do you have a question here?
Well, I wanted to share that, but I guess another question is, I guess I'm going to let him come back, and I guess just start where we left off as far as his job. And I'm trying to do baby steps. I'm trying to give it to, like, 6 months or less, and then say, well, now, you know, you need to go get a 40-hour job, 40-hour-a-week job.
Is he an addict, Kelly? Is he an addict? Is he an addict?
I believe he's a heroin addict, yes.
Does he believe he's a heroin addict?
I'm sorry?
Does he believe he's a heroin addict?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't believe he's an addict, no.
Okay. So you see how you have a similarity with Nancy there?
Yep.
So here's what I would say to both you and Nancy is go to the website and download under on the page of the PAL Group website. There is a page that says helpful resources for the family. And there it will be a form that you can print out called Recovering Person's Family Agreement. And there will also be an example of one there. So you can print out the blank form and you can print out an example and you can see how one was filled out. And what you do is you write the goals in writing and the consequences of them using. So you have this agreement in writing. And you can see how one was done by an example. And if you have it in writing, that tremendously increases the chances of them being successful.
Well, I did turn his phone back on. He convinced me in during turning his phone on. And the only reason I did that is because he was working and keeping a job, and he was going to pay us for it. And now I think the phone's getting him in trouble because all his other phone calls came through the house.
Do you have near your area? Do you have any halfway houses or transitional living homes?
Yes, and I've tried to get him to do that, but
well, he's not going to do it because he doesn't want to. He's only
right.
People don't change when they see the light; they change when they feel the heat.
Yeah.
So you could do you, Kelly. You could actually use that agreement on there that says, if you relapse, there's a place to put consequences of use. If you relapse, you agree to go to a halfway house.
Okay.
So look at that, and Nancy, too, that will be helpful for you. You can use that with your son, too. What happens, they need some help, like the mama robin that pushes them out of the nest, and then the babies, and they flap their wings, and they hit the ground, but they practice while they're falling down, and then the mom takes them back up, pushes them down, and that's how they learn how to fly.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing wrong with giving them a chance, but the chance without boundaries and consequences, they're not going to learn anything. They'll just want to stay there.
And it's in writing. We don't say anything. We don't treat him like a child, correct?
Yeah, well, the thing is, you treat him like a 55-year-old... Third cousin named Corey. And would you be letting him stay in jail? Would you go get that Corey out of jail? Would you turn on his cell phone for him? Would you see what I'm getting at is... there's no right or wrong or your instant answer to these things, but you can see the direction you're going. So can we give Kelly a hand for the direction she's going?
Yay!
So it takes time, but can you see that it feels like at least you're moving forward?
Yes.
And Nancy, can you see, does it feel like at least you're kind of moving forward with this?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so notice how it felt when you were not moving forward. Can you notice the difference there?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah. It's a difference between winter and spring. And because the difference between winter and spring is winter is when you find out about the problems and they're not getting any help. Spring is when you're getting help, even if they're not. So that's a big difference. We want them to get into summer where they get help. So it just takes time, and you're giving them chances, and that's all okay. And it's just going to take time. But if you're not moving forward, it gets really depressing and discouraging.
Yeah.
Okay, we got time for one more. Who else wants to share what's happening and what's going on? Paul and Bertie, you guys are on. Is there anything that you guys feel like sharing about your son?
In boarding school for 11 months, and he just got out on his 18th birthday. That was September 27th of last year.
Uh-huh.
And he's been home here. Well, he's been here in Greenfield, in our city, five months now. 2 weeks after he got home from the boarding school, he started using again, and we kicked him out of the house.
Let's give a hand for that.
Yay! Good job.
Well, I like the words "asked him to leave." I mean, the reason is because isn't it true his behavior? It was actually asking him to leave, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
So they say you kicked me out, but then the reality is you got yourself to be asked to leave by your behaviors. You're the one who decided to leave, because he knew that, didn't he? He knew that if he used, you'd ask him to leave, didn't he? Paul, you there?
Yeah, still here.
There you go. So anyway, that's good. They need these consequences. It's hard on us. That's why we call it tough love. It's tough on us, not on them. So where did he go live, Paul?
He went to live with some old friends from school. It was a. There wasn't enough room there for him, though. So they wound up kicking him out, and then he was living in his truck. So the weather had gotten cold, and I just couldn't see him sleeping in the Walmart parking lot, so I invited him back home again.
That's okay. I mean, we have to. We still are going to have compassion. And it gets mighty cold there. So what is he with you? If he's living with you guys now?
Yes, he's with us now. We were close to the point of kicking him out because he was using regularly in the house. But last week his he got pulled over by the police for suspicion. Someone had robbed the house and got blamed. Because he was driving the same kind of vehicle, and he was high at the time, so they impounded his truck, and they drove him home. But we found out now that he's got to appear in court for that violation, and we did get his truck out, and as a he'll be starting a new job here on Friday, but today he went to see a girlfriend, an old girlfriend, and he was with her today. And I trusted him with some money and a gift card, so I told him bring the receipt so that we know he didn't spend any of the money on drugs. So we'll see. We haven't seen him yet. Today.
The problem that you run into, Paul, is he can buy that and have the receipt to show you and then sell it at a discount to someone walking into the store and then use that money to buy drugs. So the thing about it is the truck free and clear that he owns?
Yes, it is. It was a gift to him from his grandfather.
And is it in his name only?
No, in our name.
All right. So if it was a gift to him, why isn't it in his name?
Underage.
But he's 18 now, right? Or does he have to be 21? I think it's 18. He can own property now.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a suggestion. If it's legal, I would put it in his name because of the liability issues. How much is the truck worth?
Probably $1,000.
In other words, it's an old truck, not worth too much. So, you guys have to talk louder, I guess.
It's only worth $1,000, the truck.
Okay. I would consider, though, putting it in his name for liability purposes and realizing he has a $1,000 asset. And see, we want him to take responsibility for things. It's all about responsibility. The truck's in his name. He's got a $1,000 asset. He decides whether he sells it or not and uses that $1,000 on whatever. But it's tough because 18, he's just right at that cusp of becoming a man. So
right.
This is going to take some time. But
he already told me he's afraid of growing up.
That's normal. What I just suggest you tell him, Paul, that you heard it here from this group in this meeting from this guy, that it's normal and natural for him to feel that way. But if he will go into recovery, like go to meetings or go to see a counselor, then they will teach him how to grow up. But you guys can't.
We've been going to Celebration Recovery at church.
That's good. Well, he needs to get a mentor or a counselor or a sponsor or somebody. So tell him that. Tell him, I want to see you get someone that you can talk to. See, it's hard for us as family members. We wanted to do it in the family, but we can't. He won't listen to you guys the same way. It's like Paul, we could say, when did you stop listening to your dad? You know what I mean? So
he has a mentor picked out, but he hasn't relied on him yet.
Well, it's because he doesn't have to, and he's still living the way he wants to, seeing his girlfriend and driving his truck and doing the things he wants to. So he may have to lose more things in order to get serious. But once again, here's the question. Is he an addict?
He tells me he realizes he has a problem, and he will not.
Okay, so maybe he may see how the similarity between the other two we were talking to. He may not be an addict. He may just be an abuser of drugs. But it's not going to get any better by himself. He may not need treatment, but he needs counseling. So would you guys be willing to find a counselor somewhere around there that could help him, a substance abuse counselor?
I have tried to get him to go to counseling. Oh, the only reason he goes to Celebrate Recovery is because his dad takes him and make sure he goes.
Here's what you guys are up against. You know, people don't change when they see the light. They change when they feel the heat. So it's challenging to try and help him when he doesn't want to help himself.
Sure is.
So it's just going to take some time, and I don't have any advice for you. Anyone in the group have some thoughts and ideas of something that Paul and Bertie could do?
Baby steps.
There we go. Yep.
Thank
One
you.
Step at a time. You know, Peter Pan, in that book, if you read the original book, Peter Pan, by the guy who wrote it, his name Barry, I think Jonathan Barry or whatever his name is, an English guy, that book is really good, a metaphor, an analogy of boys refusing to grow up and wanting to stay the benefits of a child. So Peter Pan was, of course, the leader of those guys, and one of the quotes in the book is he's saying, growing up would be an awfully big adventure. See, he's not doing it. He's just commenting on it. It's too big of an adventure for him. So when problems come, he just flies away. And he has two girlfriends, doesn't he? Yeah. So it's a good analogy of boys not wanting to grow into the responsibilities and the pain of adulthood. And that's what we're dealing with. And they're using drugs to help avoid it, too. So once we see that bigger picture, it's like, well, thanks. I didn't want to know that. But now that I know that, I'm a little harder to fool. So that's a positive of that. Okay. Can we give you a hand, though, that Bertie and Paul, for the fact that you guys are working on this and educating yourself and help? Absolutely.
Thank you. That's great.
That's great. Okay. We're running out of time here. Any final comments by anybody? Okay. I'm going to go down the list. In 25 words or less, Diane, what are you going to take away from this session?
Baby steps.
There you go. Thanks. Jeanette, what are you going to take away from this session?
That I can't do as much as I thought I could.
Thank you. Cindy, what are you going to take away?
Finding my own peace.
I like it. Paul and Bertie, what are you guys going to take away?
That he's not an addict because I tell him he is.
I got you. Paul, anything?
Not believe as much as he tells me.
There you go. Right on. Thank you. There's an old saying in recovery that says, the way you know they're lying is their lips are moving.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Okay. I'm just going down the list here. Nancy, can take anything away?
Well, that it's going to take longer than I wish it would take.
I got you. Thank you. Kelly.
Patience.
Sorry?
Patience,
there you go. And Rhonda?
I really have to stop myself from falling back into the caretaker, rescuer role.
It's just a matter of patience. A practice. And some people write little notes to themselves to remind them, and they'll just pull the note out when they're talking to their son or daughter. Just little tools like that to help. And it's just practice through time. And that's what Einstein said. Repetition is the answer to changing old habits. He said repetition is the key to new learning. That's what it was, repetition. So that's why we have the meetings. Thank you. Patty, anything?
Yes, to let him find somebody that he can be a role model in his life and not trying to fix it.
Right. How about a hand for that?
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Now, did I get everybody?
Yes, you did.
Okay, well, how about then if we close with a word of prayer? Who wants to volunteer to close our group with a word of prayer?
I will. I'm Patty.
Thanks, Patty.
Dear wonderful Heavenly Father, thank you for this day, and thank you for this evening, and thank you for having Mike to help us along our journey through this long road for our loved ones to recover. Lord, just be with us, strengthen us, strengthen them. It is in your precious Son, Jesus Christ's name, that we ask these things. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
Mike.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.